Well, hey there, driven woman entrepreneur. Welcome back. This is Diane Wingert, and my guest today is Tara Newman. Tara is an organizational psychologist, a certified profit-first consultant, host of the Bold Money Revolution podcast, and leader of the Bold Profit Academy. I guarantee you we had a bold conversation. It's like, go bold or go home. Tara is exactly the kind of woman that I want in my inner circle at this point in my business and life, because she knows firsthand that just being an expert, serving with purpose, and working your ass off does not necessarily add up to a profitable business if you're a woman. And she is on a bold mission to change that. Here's a couple of facts that Tara shared with me during our conversation that should help you recognize this episode is not only a potential game changer for you in your business, it is one to share with another female business owner. Are you ready? 88% of female business owners make less than $100,000 in revenue. In revenue, that is pre-tax. So we are not talking 100 grand in profit. We are talking 100 grand in revenue, and 88% of us are not hitting that mark. We talk about the fact that 51% of women default to their male partners when making financial decisions, but 100% of women feel comfortable making decisions about charitable giving by themselves. No wonder so many women have a business that operates more like a charity. Wah, wah. Tara talks about the owner's statement and how she differentiates between personal values and business values. And we get all up into a conversation about how most women want a remote business, but they don't necessarily want an online business. I want to make sure that you lean in and listen up to this episode because it is a powerful one. And Tara brings some fun too, because her analogy of the zombie apocalypse and which Walking Dead character you are is not to be missed. Now, please listen, take notes if you want, but most importantly, stay all the way to the end. And please share this one with another female business owner you know who needs to hear this bold message. Here we go. So this is a conversation that I have been looking forward to for a very long time, not only because Tara Newman is someone that I follow, because we have a lot of badass women in common in our respective ecospheres, but because her expertise, her zone of genius, her awesome sauce is like bullseye in the area that I am finding coming up again and again and again with the women that I work with. And here it is. They went into business because of their passion and because of their purpose, but a huge percentage of them were not paying attention to profit. And like, this is what you do all day long. So let's just hit it hard from the beginning. Why, oh, why is this the case with so many women?
So what I have found, and I have done a tremendous amount of research. I am a researcher by heart. My background is in industrial organizational psychology, which is a mouthful, but it's really the study of human behavior, work, and in business. So my start to my career was in academia and in research labs. Mm-hmm. And my favorite book growing up as a kid was Harriet the Spy, with her little marble notebook where she would like observe everybody and like write it down, and she was the spy, right? So that's me. And so I've done a tremendous amount of observation over the last 8 years that I've been working very specifically with female experts running service-based businesses. And even I had made a tremendous amount of assumptions about them starting out. And what I've come to realize is that women start businesses out of necessity. Nobody wakes up one day and says, I want an eight-figure business with $100,000 months that you see on the internet. They start a business typically out of necessity. They have childcare issues. They have chronic illness. The most competent person in the office, but not compensated that way, and the stress is making them ill. And they want to regain some level of autonomy and agency in their lives before they know something really bad is going to happen to their health. And they take this big, bold, naive leap with the sole purpose of getting paid, replacing their corporate traditional 9-to-5 salary through business ownership. They want to earn income independent of an employer. And then what happens is they get scared, which is totally normal. And they flick open their app, their phone, and their apps. And there's all this noise in the space of telling them what they should do and what strategy they should apply and how to make money overnight and how to get clients now and make bank and crush it and all those things. And their insecurity and their fear and their vulnerability and their lack of self-confidence takes over, and they go careening off down this profit-depleting rabbit hole of online business education. And they get twisted up and turned around, never really getting the actual knowledge and education that they need, because that is less sexy than what is being sold in these marketing messages, which is like sex and candy in a single bite.
It's true. It's fact. Women have always been told what they should want, right? And in our current online environment, women are currently being, well, the last 5 years, they've been told they want to start their own business. They want to be an online entrepreneur, and they want to have a six-figure business with passive income, and that the marketing part should be easy. And so it sounds good. It certainly sounds a lot better than having a tool of a boss and set hours and, you know, difficulty managing the other parts of your life. But once we buy into that, once we're on the hook, we are going on Mr. Toad's wild ride and told, okay, well, now that you want this, these are the things you have to do to get that. Never hearing for 1 minute that actually all the people who believed these messages and bought into programs and courses from the people selling them, only 3% of their customers get these results. And usually because they started off with an unfair advantage that is not disclosed. Would you agree?
100%, 1000% agree. And what happens is once you get into this, like I call it like a Ginsu knife matrix, like funnel, and wait, there's more, and wait, there's more that they're constantly selling you.
Yes.
Right. And the reality is it's intentionally confusing and complicated because it wears you down and you're not able to make good decisions when things are intentionally confusing and complicated. So once you start getting into it, it really kind of takes you down this rabbit hole. I had a call with a woman. I mean, I'm getting these calls every day, but I had a call with a woman who lost her retirement to these outrageously, grotesquely expensive programs that really don't deliver the steps and the tangible skills that women need to profit, to make sales, to make things easier on themselves, to understand what is passive income and what isn't passive income. You know, there's a lot of lies being told. The online business model is interesting because it's billed as accessible. It's billed as, you know, get started with no money. And it's just a lie. It's one of the most complicated business models I've ever seen. The amount of money that you have to spend in people telling you or showing you or learning what you think you need to do, and then the team to implement with all the crazy technology. There's this woman who does like, she's like one of these teeny bopper influencers. I am not a teeny bopper. So, you know, she's in her 20s and she's like, oh,
I'm clearly not a teeny bopper.
Run a successful coaching business using Instagram or whatever. And then she's like very vulnerably shares her behind the scenes, which are a hot ass mess. So I'm not really sure why anybody's trusting her to run a successful coaching business. But beside that, she actually put her numbers down. And I, anytime they do that, I rip the numbers off and I'm like, let's actually run them. Let's actually see what's happening. And they're never profitable. But the interesting thing about this one was the numbers were startlingly similar to my husband's manufacturing business, his brick and mortar manufacturing business in a high cost of living area where her expenses are more expensive than his for a brick and mortar, leasing a space, 20 employees with cost of goods. And I'm like, this is insanity.
And I think the time has finally come for truth tellers like you and me and a couple handfuls of others who realize we've bought into cults. This is not healthy. It is not profitable. It is not sustainable. And now we're trying to pull people out of those sinking ships, hopefully before they go bankrupt, hopefully before they lose their retirement, hopefully before they lose custody of their kids. But what it comes down to is, you know, business in and of itself is not sexy. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Like, I think there are people who are really drawn to being in business for themselves. I believe I am. I believe you are. But I personally don't think every woman should be an entrepreneur. I don't think everybody is cut out for it. But I think that's sort of presented as like the glamorous, sexy thing. And when somebody has a job that they really like, they're on a career path that they really like. I work with a lot of the same people you do. They were successful in corporate. They were successful in nonprofit. They were successful in academia. And they assume they're going to be successful in solopreneurship as a thought leader. But what they don't know is really hurting them. And I think the notion that profit really does need to come first, the training that you got to be able to really help other women in that way, I think one of the first things we have to do is take the bitter aftertaste out of the word profit, because women really struggle with that word, I think.
Women struggle with anything having to do with money and sales and marketing, which is unfortunately the key.
Okay, we're going broad. But it's absolutely true. And it's also...
Which is unfortunately the key.
Yes. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, because I think unfortunately, it means they get hooked. I've been hooked. Plenty of other people have been hooked and reeled in and flopping around, gasping for air in the boat. But it's what we don't understand about money. It's what we don't understand about our relationship with money. It's what we don't understand about how money works and how it can work for us. You're never going to have passive income. You're never going to reach whatever mysterious benchmark because you really won't honestly know how to get there.
Yeah. And I start these conversations and I say, not our fault. Not our fault. We were not given the language for money as women. We were not in rooms where they were talking about money or business or sales or, you know, how to be visible and promote yourself and all that and ask for money in exchange for your value and your service. And when I look at some of the data points, some of these are wildly interesting. For example, there's a UBS survey that showed 51% of married women default financial decisions, all the financial decisions to their partners. However, 100% of them are involved in decisions around charitable giving. And as somebody who considers human behavior, I have a hot take, and it is a hot take. Obviously, I haven't spoken to these women, right? But then you come into and start a business where you have to be making financial decisions, and we see women prioritizing giving all their money away for impact, for learning, for whatever. And it's like they can't hold on to their money. They can't actually profit because they've never been taught to profit. They've only been taught to be charitable and give their money away.
Okay, I got to pause you for a second. I want to make sure I'm understanding this on a deep level. Are you saying, Tara, that women, air quoting here, investing in their business by hiring people and buying information products and taking courses is a form of giving all their money away akin to charity because they don't feel comfortable actually letting it accumulate in their account?
Nuanced. It depends, because we do know that we need to be investing in ourselves. Mm-hmm. I invest a tremendous amount of money in myself, not my business, in mm-hmm. my own skills and tangible abilities and competencies. And that's important. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a place of I'm building my money-making skill set so that I can profit under any circumstances and any conditions, not from a place of, and I have invested from this place as well. It never goes okay. It's always a loss. But when you invest from a place of lacking confidence, insecurity, thinking that someone has an answer that you don't have, mm-hmm. thinking that you're wrong and someone else is right, which is why when I work with people, I'm very clear that we're going to stand shoulder to shoulder. And I'm sure you have this as well. Shoulder to shoulder, they are an expert in what they do, and I am an expert in what I do. And we are equal in having really amazing expertise, yes. just in different areas. So things like I don't question people's offers. Like, you know how to get your clients' results. I'm here to show you how to position and sell the offer. I'm here to show you the value that you're not seeing in your offer. I'm here to support you in increasing your prices. But I'm not here to question your knowledge and your expertise and what you know and your ability to get somebody a result.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Because your conversations are about value and not about expertise. The expertise is assumed, and that's a place coming to that relationship, like you say, on an even playing field, you know, eye to eye. Mm-hmm. Where do women usually start, Tara, with figuring this out? Because I find that, you know, most people say, I need to make more money. And most business owners of the type that you and I work with say, I need to get more clients. So they're thinking about generating revenue, but they're much less concerned, or it's much less of a consideration or a focus of how am I going to make that transaction profitable. It's sort of like we're constantly pouring into the bucket, the top of the bucket, but we're not necessarily making sure that it's the right amount or that once it's in there, we're going to get the most out of it. Why do you mm-hmm. think that is? Why do you think the focus is just on, I need more clients, I need more clients, I need more clients?
Because people are repeating back the marketing messages that they're swimming in. So, which is the big problem, right? This is the brainwashing. So I have a opt-in revenue goal calculator, and I offer these revenue goal calculator assessment sessions. And what we do is we find the biggest bottleneck for people with regard to their achieving their revenue goal. And it always comes back mm-hmm. to pricing, to understanding the value of what you offer, both tangibly and intangibly, and seeing yourself as somebody who has that value to offer at a level that will get you paid, make you profitable, and get you paid. And so it really starts there. But if nobody is out there, if you're not able to, and this is where I say you do need to invest in yourself, right? Because they're not seeing this for themselves, but they're mm-hmm. also not in programs that help them see these things. So I don't know Correct. What to say.
Yes.
Like, they don't realize that the first step is the first step because they're so wanting to have quick fixes. They're so in their fear and anxiety and insecurity about, you know, making money that they're not actually doing the things that will help them make money, which is like the weirdest part about the online marketing soup.
Mm-hmm. I see a lot of women. And I think anytime we're dealing with cultural yes. Mm-hmm. Say more about that.
Well, I think they feel, you know, a lot of women, I need to think right and correct. I need to look right and correct. My offers and everything need to be right and correct. And I'm not the person who's going to decide whether they are right or correct. Someone else is going to do that for me. They're going to give me this permission, this validation, this whatever. And for whatever reason, it's, well, if I can just think right about making money, then I will make money. And that is partially true, but really for me, I say, let's do math before mindset.
And my version of that is, let's separate the math from the drama. Because whatever is going on in your head about why you can't make money because of your money story or your money archetype or your money blocks or your, you know, the stories that were taught to you when you were a kid about money. And I do not discount mindset because,
not
like
all,
you,
right?
I have a psychology background. However, it isn't the whole story. And you can get a ton of improvement in your money mindset and still be broke as a joke in your business because you do not actually understand how to be profitable. Now, when you decided to become a profit first consultant, do you ever, I'm just curious if you ever get feedback from women that, well, but does it actually have to be profit first? I mean, like I want to make a profit, but like, I just don't really feel comfortable making that the top priority.
100% I've heard I'm not motivated by money. Definitely have people who come to me who want to make an impact. And to be honest, if that's what they're leading with, and after I ask them a bunch of questions, if they're just very compelled that they want to share their story, they want to have an impact, they want to impact millions, I can't work with them because impact comes through income, period. We can slice this however many ways that you want to, but in the reality, you're going to have a bigger impact once you have that income. Now, as far as like profiting first, and you know, to me, it's just more that they don't understand. And they even know, the women that I see, they know what they know that they don't know something. They're just looking for what that is in the wrong places.
100% agree. And I would imagine that by the time they reach you, Tara, they have probably been looking for business love in all the wrong places, following all the wrong people, getting whipsawed by confusion and depleted emotionally, financially. Their confidence is down because it's like, it can't be this hard. And actually, that's probably perfect timing to work with someone like you because they have the awareness that business is hard and complicated and there's got to be a better way. And in fact, there is. It just may not be as sexy as what you've been taught to think is sexy. And you may not find a bunch of other people talking about doing it that way, which can be scary. One of the things I think is really interesting about your business is that you talk about bold money and bold leadership, because in my experience, you know, women do have difficulty with money and they have difficulty identifying themselves as leaders, even though they have been in positions with a tremendous amount of responsibility over either a big budget or a bunch of people. But it's like, identifying that you are a leader seems to be another stumbling block, but it's absolutely necessary to unlock, I think, their full potential, whatever size business they're in.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, there's also the component. So when I work with larger businesses, I work with all different ranges of business in different industries. It's actually what I like most about my work is that, you know, when I go and test strategies, I'm testing them across various industries, various different size companies, different personality styles of CEOs and things like that. And when I'm working in larger businesses, like my largest business that I work in, or they're between like 60 million and 100 million in revenue, the one thing that we work on the most for their leadership is having difficult conversations. And there is nothing more helpful for your money and your sales is to be able to have difficult conversations, which is a leadership skill. So it really does all tie together and factor in.
Preach. Actually, having difficult conversations is something I consider to be a superpower of mine because I'm relentlessly honest. I'm relentlessly curious. If I feel like I don't fully understand a situation, I just keep asking more questions. And typically, people find that uncomfortable because they either expect to be able to figure it out quickly and easily, or they are afraid of going too deep and getting to a level where they're out of their range or unprepared. That's when I think things start getting interesting, is when you really start digging in, because I think sooner or later you're gonna find what the actual problem is. But you know, it all makes sense how all these things are connected. If women haven't been taught about money, haven't been taught about leadership skills, don't feel comfortable having those challenging conversations, we are limited in every possible way, whether we are in business for ourselves or we work for someone else. And those are the very things that, this is maddening, okay? We come from similar world, academia. They're the very things that are held against women in terms of promotability, because mm-hmm. they're told that they lack these certain leadership skills, but then they're not given the opportunity to develop them. And women who do demonstrate them oftentimes get other negative feedback.
Yep. It's a very tight box for women. And I also want to say, like, women are tired. God dang. Women are tired. They're holding a lot. You know, just from my own personal life, my husband owns a business. I own a business. We have two kids, teenagers, and he's just been traveling for 3 weeks of the last 4 weeks. And I'm running a business, delivering service, got two teens, got two dogs, got a house, got a mother who is requiring more support than I thought she ever would, where we are right now. And it's, you know, I've got it all on my plate. And so women do not need complicated business strategies and tactics that create more overwhelm in their lives. They have enough. I'm very committed to, I have an owner's statement that says, you know, why I run a business is to create a business that is in service to my health and generates extraordinary wealth for myself and others. And that is what I'm here to do, to help women do, to create businesses that are easy on their energy and get them paid. And the reality is it's far simpler than they have been led to believe, that they want to believe. And the biggest challenge for me is the cognitive dissonance that comes into play when I'm, and I'm sure like you too, when we're just speaking the truth and it's so divergent from the pink, glittery, infantile, cutesy marketing that they're seeing online.
Yes. And so it feels jarring to them.
Uncomfortable.
You know, they obviously.
And we have a big problem with discomfort in this country. We don't like to be uncomfortable. Americans, North Americans, all Canadians in there. We can put the Western world in there. We can put UK in there. You know, we like our comfort. Mm-hmm. We like to not have to be challenged in a way. And women are especially fearful of putting themselves in uncomfortable positions. A lot of that has to do with our own conditioning. But the more that we can become comfortable with doing those uncomfortable things, the quicker it's going to be for us. And the pushback for me always comes with people are like, but this is systemic, but this is our conditioning, but this is like, but we've been penalized on one side and the other. Yes, we have. 100%. I'm not denying that. That is true. And are we going to be victims to that? Or are we going to rise above that? Because now more than ever, there are tools and are information and sources and resources for women to move beyond that place.
I would also link in boundaries.
Yes.
To this conversation, because it's, you know, boundaries, whether it's, I can't do that. I'm, you know, like you just talked about your husband being gone for 3 of the last 4 weeks. My husband was also gone for 3 of the last 4 weeks. My kids are grown and flown, but I have a new puppy. It's like a new baby, basically, and the household, and we just moved and all of those things. And The other thing here is the disproportionate division of labor in heterosexual households, right? Still, mm-hmm. after all these years, whether you have a job, a business, if you have aging parents, if you've got pets, if you've got kids, if you've got a big piece of property you have to manage, whatever it may be, women are still doing the majority of the household labor in addition to whatever paid labor they may be doing. And we've never really, I mean, if you think about, I'm sure you have done this, if you had to absent yourself from your household and your spouse had to literally purchase all of the services that you provide, he couldn't afford it.
Total collapse.
Absolutely couldn't afford it. But yes, it would be a total collapse. Well, and on a systemic level. And you know what? I totally agree with you that you and I both have privilege that some female mm-hmm. business owners do not have. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think that that should end the conversation about what any one of us individually are capable of doing. It's kind of like, should we not try to change any of these things in our personal lives because these are systemic issues? I think if enough women are changing them and talking about changing them, and other women realize, even if they don't look like us or don't have the exact same circumstances as us, we can still educate them, we can still inform them, we can still inspire them. I don't know how we have any chance of the systemic culture changing without us. Do you?
I don't. I think that that's why women need to be profitable. And back to your example of, or your point with boundaries, profit is a boundary for me. There is no business without profit and without paying myself, which is required, you know, profit is required to pay yourself, because most women that I speak to, so first of all, 88% of women small business owners are earning less than $100,000 in revenue in their business, which doesn't mm-hmm. leave them a whole hill of beans to pay themselves. And the majority mm-hmm. of women that, and so this is true, this statistic was put out back in 2018. I don't think anything's changed. If anything, it's gotten worse, to be frank. It's grim. And that doesn't really leave a ton of money for women to pay themselves. And the fact of the matter is, most women that I talk to aren't paying themselves. And that's unacceptable, because we're putting in, as an expert, you can go right now and get a job making six figures, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I'm watching people with less experience, certifications over degrees, go and make six figures in the working world. So it's unacceptable to me, fundamentally unacceptable, that women are not paying themselves in their businesses. Period. The amount of effort and experience,
agreed,
and energy that goes into owning and running and delivering in your business requires you to make more money than you're making.
And while I think most women agree with that philosophically, when you actually start doing the numbers, you have to address the cognitive dissonance. I mean, I see it in people's faces on the Zoom screen when you realize mm-hmm. you're saying something that's disruptive, like their brain literally hurts because they say, I never thought about it this way. Well, yes, and that's why you're here. And I didn't think about it that way. Let me tell you a little story. I was a single parent for a decade. I got divorced when I turned 40 and my kids were 10, 12, and 15. I supported them on my own dime for 10 years, including putting all of them through First Community College and then State College, putting braces on their teeth, helping them get their first shitty car and get prepared for adult life on their own. I did that at my own expense. I did not contribute to my own retirement for those 10 years, which, and I never got braces, by the way. So it's like, this is a typical mindset for women. I was focusing on being proud of the fact that I was a head of household and I was able to support my family without, you know, I didn't get child support and things like that, but I did so at my own expense. So was I really winning? Not really. And I think that I realize after talking to so many different women that that is
very typical. If we have children, we're so focused on making sure their needs are being met that we typically do so at our own expense.
Well, I think that's the, so first of all, that's, thank you for sharing that story. And I'm really proud of you. Not that you asked me to be proud of you or anything like that, but I think you did an amazing job. I think that should be something you're proud of. And I get what you're saying with the kind of setting yourself on fire to do that, but that's an incredible story. And I think that so much of that is just buying into this narrative that we have, that this conventional, traditional narrative that doesn't take into account any specific, really any specifics about somebody's individual situation at all, right? And that's where we need to be challenging our beliefs is, you know, how would this look if I did it unconventionally? How would this look if I didn't follow the rules? How would this look if I was brave enough to buck the system and go against the grain? Because women have been raised to be good girls. I mean, we are so the good girl, the good girl next door. I mean, look at that in a marketing message. We all know who the good girl online is, and we see her marketing message, and it is like moths to a flame trying to be the good girl online. And that is not going to get you very far. You need to be the woman who makes decisions that align with her values and what she wants in the world. And to also know that looking back and like Diane has done and had this self-reflection, you know, that's a wonderful learning and a lesson in your life. And, you know, I went bankrupt and that's like the best lesson for me. I'm not here because I've always succeeded or did things perfectly or didn't make a mistake. I'm here because I failed miserably. I'm here because I spent the majority of my time thinking that I was a nobody, not that I thought that I was a somebody. And that is such a painful thing to overcome in business as well. Just this belief that we have to be the good girl and perfect and to do it all right and to never mess up or lose money or any of those things. But my best, I make money. I am a wealthy woman because of the mistakes I've made, not because of the safety of not making mistakes.
I love this so much. And do you think, Tara, that it was necessary for you to make those mistakes, to experience those failures and learn from them, to have the bold message that you have now? Because I love that you feature the word bold in so many of the things that you do, because it's truth in advertising. They know that what they see is what they're going to get. And I think just proclaiming and embracing your boldness in a way is telling women, yeah, you kind of have to distance yourself from this notion of being like sweet and passive and demure and likable if you actually want the things that you actually want. And if you're attracted to boldness, you have that inside of you too. But I think that women are terrified of failure. And that is the number one reason why we don't succeed, because we believe that if we fail, we are a failure. If we make a mistake, we don't have what it takes. But I don't think most men who are successful expect to succeed right out of the gate. And that's probably the dirtiest little secret that we should start telling little girls in grade school is plan to fail and get up and try again. And we don't do that.
We have a real failure to manage expectations in the space of business, especially online. We're just not truth-telling enough. And the reality is that I still fail and make mistakes. I make mistakes every day. I lose money all the time. I just don't make a big damn deal about it. And that's why I go out and I make more. I'm like, okay, I made this mistake. What did I learn? How am I going to use this to go make more money? You know, I started off in my business, and this is hysterical, and I'm always really embarrassed to share this. I've been with my husband for 27 years. We've been married for 22. And before we even were married, I gave him my paycheck. I just handed over my paycheck. And I'm like, here, dude, you do with it. Like, I couldn't be bothered. I didn't want to know. You know, so much of that had to do with the very real stories that I had about how I managed money as a young teen. you know, that stories that my parents and family mm-hmm. reinforced and all that stuff. And I did not start managing money until I started my business. So the first year in business, he did my books. At the end of the year, after they were a total mess, and I was like, I think I need to pay taxes on this. Like, how do we do this? Here you go. And he's like entering all my expenses and he's not thrilled. I wasn't thrilled. That was really uncomfortable. And I really vowed that I was going to gain financial literacy after that. And the only thing that I did, because I didn't even know what financial literacy was, I didn't know what that meant. I wasn't all of a sudden going to really start like paying the bills in our house, because that was something that, you know, we had always combined our money. By the way, if you don't trust your spouse with money or you think there is financial abuse, please don't combine your money just because I combine my money with my partner. I just always like to just put that caveat yes, out there.
Thank you.
But we have our money combined and I do trust him and he does a fine job with it. And I just was like, okay, I'm just going to gain financial literacy. And anytime there was money or finances involved, instead of shrinking and turning away and hiding and avoiding it, I just leaned in. That was how I started. And then what I found out was that I have a real gift for all things money, creating opportunity, creating something where there was nothing, creating money, going and making more money, understanding the value of things, understanding how to position the value of the thing, understanding how money works and how to take the money I'm already making and go make more money with that money, but without having to work for the money, right? True passive income. And so when I first started my business, my first goal, like everybody else's, is this $100,000. I'm going to make $100,000 in revenue. But what I didn't know at the time, embarrassingly enough, but also there are some people on this podcast that are going to hear this for the first time as well. $100,000 in revenue is not $100,000 in paying yourself. There is a very big difference between that. There are things that need to happen with the $100,000 in revenue in your business so that you can pay yourself. So then my next goal was, okay, I want to pay myself $100,000. And then I wanted to pay my team $100,000 because that was going to mean that I was really supported in my business and that I was creating jobs, which I love to do, creating opportunities for others. So my owner's statement is that I create wealth for myself and others. It's if you take the and others out of my owner's statement, it doesn't have any meaning to me. That is my impact, but I can only do that because I've created wealth for myself first, oxygen mask on, right? Which is what sort of what Diane was saying was that she wasn't putting her oxygen mask on first. And so then it became, all right, so I've gotten to $100,000 in revenue. I pay myself $100,000 plus in pay. I pay my team $100,000. Well, now I want to invest $100,000 into my retirement and into my wealth creation in a year. And I had no idea how I was going to do that. I knew that I wanted to do it on my own and I wanted to learn and I didn't want to hire an advisor who I may or may not trust who was going to charge me large fees and all that stuff. So I went and I learned, spent years learning about financial planning and investing. And then I invested my money and I have made so many mistakes along the way. There were these stupid, shitty rockets that I bought that like I read a headline and it was like,
rockets,
like a rocket company. I'm like, they read a headline. These rockets are going to be amazing and they have the best leadership team. And I'm like, oh, I like their leadership team. This sounds like a wonderful idea. And the rockets crashed and burned. Right? So I bought Peloton because I love Peloton. And there's this whole theory in investing to buy.
I love Peloton.
And I lost like 80% of my money investing in Peloton because I was emotionally involved in it. So like I learned all this stuff about investing and like what to invest in and how to invest, not because I made all this money, but because I lost all this money.
And failure is a teacher that unless you make the mistake of thinking, I failed, therefore I'm a failure, therefore I shouldn't do this anymore. You thought, this is not the outcome I wanted. What do I need to do next time to course correct so I can make that money back and then some? You know, something I'm wondering is that one of the assumptions that I made about you, Tara, is that you grew up with entrepreneurial parents and you're married to an entrepreneur. And so my biased thinking is, oh, so that must be an advantage, right? That must mean that her learning curve is not as steep as the rest of ours. And it's so refreshing to hear you talk about all these ways that you screwed up and how much you learned from that. Because I think it's one of the other things, going back to your statement about how women want to be the good girl and we want to just be told what to do. And we don't think we do, but we actually do. And it's why we get brainwashed easily, I think, because when someone tells us it's easy, it's fast, it's fun, anyone can do it, and you're going to be rolling in the cheddar, we're like, sign me up, here's my card. You are demystifying, even for me in this conversation, some of the assumptions that I made about you, because I have this belief, maybe until now, you might have just relieved me of it, that if you grew up in an entrepreneurial family, that it's kind of a fast track path to your own success. And that's not what I'm hearing.
Yeah. You know, okay. So interestingly enough, one of the things that when I work with these larger businesses, they are often multi-generational businesses and I'm supporting them in transition. And I also grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Yes, 100%. And so this is such a great, nobody's ever asked me this. Nobody's ever said this to me. And I think this is awesome. So thank you. Couple things. My dad started off sweeping floors. He was struggling to hold down a job. He had done a stint in, at the time, a mental institution and was put on lithium and was rejected from the Vietnam draft. So this was not a stable human. And so he would, he started by, and I mean that with absolutely no disrespect at all or judgment or anything like that. It's just a starting point, right? And he started by sweeping the floors in this business. And decades later, he went on to buy it. So what that taught me was work ethic. He had quite the work ethic. Yes, of course, I have stories around having to be productive all the time. Thanks, Dad, right? But he really taught me how to work and he made me work for everything. I wanted to travel between college and grad school. And he was like, you've got bills to pay and $10 an hour. This is in 1998, folks. So forgive my numbers here. And he's like, $10 an hour is not going to cut it. You need to go get a real job. And likewise, he would not, while I worked for him as like, while I was in school, he would never, no matter how much I asked and begged, and I did, would never let me come and work in the business because he wanted me to go and do work that I was passionate and proud of and not work that I was doing because it was a family business. He never talked to me about money. I knew that he had anxiety and stress about money, but he never really talked to me about money. And that's actually a commonality among the business owners that I work with in multi-generational families, that this was not knowledge that was transferred and passed down. And as a matter of fact, for those who were born into a lot of money because of their parents' business, it's actually terrifying because they were left a sum of money that they have no idea how to earn if they ever lost it. So they have a tremendous amount of scarcity, more so than anybody else I've ever really seen, because they don't understand how money works. They're responsible for it, and they wouldn't be able to make it if they had to on their own. So that's really interesting. I have no idea how much my dad is worth. I have no idea if he's worth anything. I have no idea if I'm getting money as a, you know, as an inheritance. He liquidated his whole business.
Inheritance.
He sold the whole business without anybody working in it or getting a part of it or anything like that. And as far as my husband goes, you know, and you have to realize too that my husband's father was an entrepreneur. They had no education. They didn't know how to run a business. And that's true for a lot of that school of thought, right? My dad happened to be a voracious learner. And so he was always interested in like passing on lessons. So he taught me how to learn, not necessarily how to run a business, although I watched him, I emulated him. Like if you asked me when I was like 4 or 5 what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would say in charge, because he was leading and he was in charge. That's greatest my girl. The greatest gift that I think my dad did give me was he never gendered my sister and I. He never treated us like girls. There were two girls in my family. We never wore dresses. I was a tomboy. I thought I was a boy for a very long time growing up. He never treated us like boys or girls. It was very agendered. And I think that was probably one of the greatest gifts that he did give us, even though it caused a lot of confusion later in life, to be clear. And as far as like my husband's concerned, you know, he has his skill set. I have mine. And I hope he never listens to this podcast, because there was a really long period of time where he was turning around the business that he took over from his father, where we share a mutual accountant. And his accountant was like, I think you need to come and run the business. I think, you know, would you consider coming and being the CEO and letting him go and do the ops stuff? And this was at the very beginning of me starting my company. And I was like, no, I'm not going to set myself on fire. He will figure it out. He has paid me to come into his business and do work. He receives regular and consistent coaching at the dinner table. And, you know, he's equally supportive of me. He's equally supportive of me, but, you know, and I have learned a lot from my husband, like I would learn from any other co-entrepreneur who has these, you know, very maybe more honest conversations than you would have in a mastermind. And he understands, he's really great because he owns a brick and mortar business. He's really great for like when I show him shit that people are saying online. And I'm like, what do you think of this? And he's like, I think it's a cult. And I'm like, what do you think of this? He's like, it sounds like an MLM. And I'm like, so he's really good for like sense checking me with that stuff. But, you know, we equally learn from each other. And the two of us learn 100%. We've both made serious, serious, serious mistakes together and separately.
I think one of the things that stands out most for me about you, Tara, is that you don't personalize the fact that you may struggle. You don't personalize the fact that you may fuck up. You don't personalize the fact that you may fail. It's just part of the game. And in that respect, it's like you're not only thinking like an entrepreneur, but you're thinking the way men have been taught to think ever since they were little boys. And you should be leading women. I'm really grateful that you are, and that you are leading women in the area of transforming their relationship with money, because what they don't know is very much hurting them and holding them back. And all of this stuff is intergenerational, and many of us have daughters and nieces and female friends of the family. My last question for you is, do you think any woman can be a business owner? Can, not that, whether they should, but do you think any woman can be a successful business owner?
I love that question. And here's what I want everybody listening to this podcast to consider. Think of this as the zombie apocalypse. All right. I know some people really have like a strong opinion about zombies, but like, let's think about this, like the zombie apocalypse. I've loved watching The Walking Dead until like, I don't remember, maybe episode 9, where things got really wild, but it's a zombie apocalypse. And there are three types of characters in a zombie apocalypse. There is the one who is like, I'm just going to take the cyanide tablet, pop it, done. Right? They're out. They're like, I'm not even going to spend any amount of energy trying to figure this out. This is hard and exhausting, and I've said my piece with life, and I'm good with it, right? Cyanide tablet.
Peace out.
Then, peace out, right? And then there are the ones who are like, I'm going to get ahead by stepping on everybody else. I'm going to steal resources, and I'm going to be in scarcity, and I'm going to do shitty things, and I'm going to manipulate and cajole and convince and persuade and just be not a great
I'm going to be a fucking sociopath zombie.
I'm going to be a sociopath. Yes. Yeah. Thank
I'm going to be
Diana.
The zombie equivalent of a sociopath. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And then you have the person who is like, I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to be in alignment with my integrity and my values. And when I get to the end of this thing, I'm going to be a leader in the new society. And I'm going to help create something wonderful and beautiful after this time of sorrow and despair and bereavement and Holocaust. And so I want you to seriously consider which one of those three archetypes you feel aligned to, and you will know whether or not you can and should be a business owner.
Girl, did you just make this up on the spot?
I think about lots of weird ass shit, Diane, in my free time.
Same. No, same. In fact, while you were saying it, I think we definitely have a little bit of a hive mind thing going on here. But what you were just sharing about the three different types of approaches in the zombie apocalypse, as soon as you started explaining it, it reminded me of a story that I tell when I was a coach on a Spartan race. I could do nothing for the people who are the elite athletes who could scamper up the 30-foot rope like a monkey and flip upside down, ring the cowbell with their feet, and then scamper down and go on their merry way. They didn't need anything from me, and I didn't try to offer them something. I also couldn't do anything for the people who took one look at said rope and thought, hell no. So they took the alternative and did the 30 burpees, which is the requirement if you refuse to attempt one of the obstacles. The ones that I actually grabbed the bullhorn and called out to them individually and helped them make it the rest of the way up the rope were the ones who could get about 70 to 85% of the way by sheer will and skill. But then they stalled out physically, emotionally, mentally. They just couldn't go any further. They were totally shaking. They didn't want to quit, but they couldn't go any further. I'm like, I can help you close the gap. So I think it's like knowing what you're called to do. If you're called to lead and you're okay with being really, really, really uncomfortable, then I think you are called to be a business owner. Wasn't that a powerful conversation? I only recently connected with Tara Newman, and I already have so much respect for her. I want to make sure you listen to her, you learn from her, and you continue to follow her, because this lady is the real deal. You know, I like to think of myself as the speaker of uncomfortable truths, and I think Tara can actually share that title with me. Because what women don't understand about money and their relationship with money is holding them back. Even women business owners. We need to learn more. We need to do better. And it's really the only way that our business can be successful and sustainable is to be profit first and not let ourselves burn out in the process. So I really want to thank you for staying all the way to the end of this episode. Make sure you click on the link in the show notes. Check out Tara's website, her podcast, and so much more. I'll be back next week with another No BS straight shooting solo episode. And in the meantime, stay driven.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.